Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast ever, where we talk about the Doom Patrol non-stop, well, once a week sort of thing.
We pause for sentences and breaths, but anyway, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. If you want to send us an email, waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We just say it every week so you all remember. If you want to see like DVD extras for what we do, except without a DVD, my greatest adventure 80.blogspot.com. That's where the Doug Zavisha runs his blog, which has extra stuff about our show. Mm-hmm. We're on Facebook, aren't we, Mike? Yes.
We sure are.
And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com, so you can find them all. Don't listen to the early ones. They're terrible. I had to listen to one the other day. I was like, good grief, we've come a long way.
Which one was it? Which early episode was it?
Oh, it's one of those ones where it sounds like I'm recording it in a sewer.
Oh, really early stuff.
Yes, before Riffs are sorting out my audio. So.
Yes, a big shout out to the silent partner of the show, Rifty. You know, always love his contribution to the show, which is, you know, getting Paul online.
Yeah, keeping me online.
Yes.
Connect.
And by the way, yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can
hello,
also find
Mike.
On Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com, a great site for news, reviews, and previews of all the latest in comicdom.
Check it out. Yes. This week on the show, we are going back to the Grant Morrison bucket. And dipping in the big ladle to see what we can get out. So we're looking at issues 49 and 50. 50, what a milestone for the Doom Patrol. That's the first ever issue 50 the Doom Patrol ever had.
The only one so far, isn't it?
The only one so far.
Well, we'll see what September brings, and well, after September. But anyway, how's your week in comics and stuff been, Paul?
Oh, Mike. I'm just saying your name again. I've been reading Prez.
Ooh, now is this the recent run
This is the Mark Russell Prez, the recent one.
Okay.
So, yeah, I got that from the library, and I've been reading it, and about three issues in, and I'm pretty convinced I ought to go and buy it and own it.
Wow.
Because it's that good. It's razor sharp. It's cynical. It's funny. It's, it's 20 years in the future, but the way things are going, it could be 5 years in the future as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, dear.
You know, like poor people can get drones from taco drones come to them and give them free tacos, but they have to wear advertising for the taco drones, things right. like that. And, politicians argue on TV and you can see this ratings percentage next to both of them the entire time and everything. So, yeah, so a very timely thing to read. And, Prez is a teenage girl who becomes like a YouTube sensation and wins the presidency based on her popularity. So, yeah. But she's the most terrifying thing to the people who fix the elections and run the world.
Right.
Because she has no wants or desires. And she's already used to being humiliated, so.
Those damn YouTube comment sections, huh?
Well, I mean, she gets famous because she gets her hair caught in a corn dog fryer or something. Yeah. So, anyway, I very much enjoyed it. It's really good. And Mark Russell is writing The Flintstones. And based on his writing of Prez, I'm very interested in The Flintstones as well.
I've heard mixed reactions to that, that it is somewhat cynical as well. And a very interesting take on what we know of the Flintstones.
Well, the last solicitation for number three said something about a sex cave, and I thought, this is a solicitation for a Flintstones comic? It's talking about a sex cave?
Yep.
Yabba dabba doo.
Yabba dabba do it.
Sorry, Mike. What about your week?
true to form, as of late, I've not read a single comic other than the one I'll be discussing in this episode. My stack is still there, still taunting me, still waiting to be gotten to. So yeah, I've been really lazy and slacking off in my comic reading. The only, I guess, pop culture related thing I did recently was dress up as a Ghostbuster.
I did see the photos.
Yeah, it was for there's a steampunk society that runs charity balls to raise money for cancer research. And this year, because of the recent Ghostbuster film, they allowed Ghostbusters to join the steampunk fun this year. So it was a lot of fun. I was one of the regular type Ghostbusters, and then there were other Ghostbusters there whose costumes and gear looked like they were literally from the original first film. It was that that well done. And chatting to them and learning how much money they spent on their costumes, it was well worth it. And then there were people who were Ghostbusters from the steampunk era sort of thing. So they had all weird cogs and gadgets and stuff, and lots of other steampunk people there. So it was really interesting to spend an evening with a subculture I've not really gone near before. I've seen a few steampunkers at like comic conventions before, but when you're in a ballroom full of them, holy geez.
Wow.
There was one guy there that looked like a Prussian soldier, except he was a robot as well, because he had what looked like a tea urn or a coffee urn that had cogs and pipes arranged on them so that it looked like a robot's face. So almost like a Prussian robot man.
Ooh.
So it was very impressive, some of the costumes. So yeah, I keep saying it, but I will get back to my comics one day. Hopefully this coming weekend, because next week I have another 30 odd waiting for me in my comic box in my store. Yeah, 31. So.
Wow. Good dear.
Yeah. It's a hard life.
It is.
So many comics. Oh my God.
Well, you know what else we've got apart from lots of comics?
What's that, Paul?
Lots of comic news.
Hooray!
Yeah, so maybe we should go down on Darrington Way.
Let's do it.
So it's been a couple of weeks since we looked at what has been forthcoming from the Darrington Way camp. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that came out is we got the cover for Doom Patrol Volume 2, issue 2 of Volume 6, which is... it's highlighting Larry Traynor, and it's a bit of a depiction of his origin. So it's got a crashed airplane in the background, and Larry is he's on some salt flats or something, because they're a very nice reflection, and he is horrified. He's doing a bit of a platoon pose with his helmet off, and he's got his parachute cords in front of him, but his hands are back, and he's screaming to the sky in existential horror because he has become a radioactive man. So he can see his skull through his skin. Mm. So he's glowing in the dark. It's a very good piece of art.
Yes. Very, very impressed with what we're seeing of Nick Darrington's stuff. Really cool.
He seems to be some sort of artist, doesn't he?
Just a bit.
Yeah, it's a very good choice for a comic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, and we did get the solicitation, and there's an alternate cover by Michael Allred as well. Michael Allred's going to do the alternate cover. Anyway, so this is the solicitation. What happened to Larry Traynor? The hero known as Negative Man is still out there, but he's not exactly the same guy he was back when Doom Patrol was still together. Like a Russian doll, there is a man inside the man, and who knows how many other men inside of them. The guy on top possessing a mind for mischief that incites violence. Ooh. Meanwhile, Casey has started rebuilding Robot Man, even though she doesn't know exactly how Cliff Steele ended up crossing her path in the first place. In shops October 12th, 2016.
Nice.
$3.99. So it sounds to me like they're doing a bit of people putting the band back together as far as the Doom Patrol is concerned, isn't it?
Yes.
So,
which I think will be a nice introduction or even reintroduction.
Yeah, so it looks like
big players.
Looks like Casey the EMT, and it looks like she's got a partner as well who's going to be part of the comic as well.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like, you know, they are trying to repair Robot Man and find out the secret of Negative Man and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, we've got the normal person giving us a gateway into the team. So,
yeah.
That sound, I approve of it.
Yes. I like that the use of that sort of thing. Yeah, very cool.
What else have we seen lately? Let's have a look. We had some exclusive variant covers that we knew these were coming, but we've started to see them. So there's one by Sanford Green, which shows, I'm not sure, it's Casey, Flex, and Robot Man, and Negative Man, and Niles, and another character in the foreground, who's wearing a whole bunch of comic-related badges.
Yes.
Looks like he's got a White Lantern badge, and he's got a Batman badge, and a Robin badge.
Mm-hmm. The Flash. I think he's got OMAC as well.
Yeah, all sorts of things. Do we know who that character is?
Well, see, I'm wondering if we've been shown a sort of cat person character before, who I'm pretty sure has also worn sort of like a vest with badges on it. So I'm wondering if that character is like a shape changer sort of thing.
A wereputty.
Yes, that's the comic book science term for it. Wereputty. Yeah, well, so that's what I'm wondering. And I think that the cat is called Lotion.
Lotion.
Yeah, so I'm probably completely off base there, but that's my hot take on it.
I did hear that somewhere. So Jared Way puts the lotion in the comic.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, we did see some undialogued interior art, which showed a bit of a close-up of the gyro and then sort of a retro space scene.
Yeah.
That it's somehow connected to it as you zoom in, and then this gyro gets thrown in the bin by one of the EMTs, and then we see flies on it, and then you can see like the flies have become the horizon, and there's all these people sort of walking in the desert. Looks a bit, what's it? It reminds me of Prophet, you know, the Brandon Graham Prophet series.
Ah, yes. Yes.
That's what it looks like to me.
Mm.
And then there's sort of these robot-type soldiers, and they've got big guns, and one of them has got a word balloon which has a picture of a fly in it.
Yeah. It all ties back nicely to flies.
So we're in for some weird stuff.
Good.
Good. All right. Huh. I think I hear some ticking.
That can only be the Doom Clock. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that on the one side, it's telling us that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hot little hands was issue 22 of Volume 5 from Keith Giffen and Matthew Clark. That was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year, so it's been 5 years and 12 weeks since the last actual Doom Patrol book. But when you look at the other side of the Doom Clock, it's telling us that the first issue of Volume 6 is due out September 14th, and that's only 7 weeks away. Hot damn.
That's wow.
Getting close.
It's so close.
So close. Oh, we're going to have to reconfigure the Doom Clock yet again once we actually hit those 7 weeks. But the last appearance of the team was 50 weeks ago in two different comics. We saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for the princely sum of US $1 on July 26, 1988, cover dated November 1988, was Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue 14, from recent guest Paul Kupperberg and artist Eric Larson. Yeah. This issue was titled Order and Doom, and it saw the Patrol help Power Girl in her fight against the Lord of Chaos known as Pythia. Did we ever agree on a pronunciation of that?
No, we didn't. We didn't.
Pythia. Anyway, this issue also marked the very first ever appearance of Dorothy Spinner, who would go on to become a full team member once Morrison took over as writer. And we discussed this issue in more detail back in episode 53, which we cleverly titled Order, Chaos, Doom, and Butts. So you can, so you can check that one out for more.
Yeah.
There are a few butts in that, butt shots in that that issue. Yeah. Interesting. But anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
a secret governmental organization operating behind the scenes. Task Force X.
Task Force X is an off-the-books government strike team made up of convicts with no hope for release, serving as expendable agents for impossible missions. Succeed, and I'll shave time off your sentences.
If we don't,
you'll be dead. Any other stupid questions?
The Suicide Squad, ran by Amanda Waller.
I'm Amanda Waller. I'm here to indoctrinate you convicts into our special forces.
And there's Checkmate, ran by Harry Stein. This is the tales of DC Comics, Suicide Squad, and Checkmate. Mostly monthly from Headspeaks. Available on iTunes under Task Force X and under Headcasts over at headspeaks.com. We can also be found on Facebook and Google Plus under Task Force X. Task Force X. Check it out, or you'll answer to the wall.
Nobody screws the wall!
Now it's time for Doomsplaining. So as we said earlier, we're looking at Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 49 and 50. Now, Mike, do you want to take us through number 49?
Number 49. And may I just say, this is one of my favorite covers from this run of Doom Patrol.
But this is a fantastic cover.
By Tom Taggart. It looks... I'm sure I've seen sort of behind-the-scenes photos of it where it's actually like a... what's the word I'm looking for? Like a model or a display that he's built of actual pieces and parts, and it's got Robot Man's face with all these cogs and dials and things coming out of the top of his head and the glowing eyes. Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, this guy's been, modeling, diving into the Airfix kits and pulling them apart and so that, I reckon. So yeah. It reminds me of how they make, it's the original Star Destroyers and things in Star Wars.
Very old school cool modeling.
Yeah, but he did some Batman covers earlier.
Okay.
In the mid 400s, I think. So, but he did it was two covers. One had it was a cathedral model, and Batman was on one spire on one cover, and there was like a goblin on another spire on the other cover, and they matched together.
I will have to check that out. I really like his stuff that he does.
Mm. I've got a letter in one of them.
Really?
Yeah, actually, I really do.
Right. Uh-huh. Anyway, so it's issue 49. Went on sale October 1st, 1991, for the cover price of $1.50. Oh, nice stuff. Cover dated November 1991. It was edited by Tom Robert Payer, written by Grant Morrison, penciled by Richard Case. Mark Badger was the inker. Johnny Workman Jr. was the letterer, and Daniel Vozzo was on colors. And yeah, this is some Morrison. Oh, Morrison. So the issue begins with a dream. We're in the middle of someone's dream, Bobby Carmichael's dream. And he sees a vague, uncertain figure standing beneath a tree that bears gloves instead of leaves. And Bobby reaches up for a red glove from the tree and places it on his hand. And he's tasting a special name on the tip of his tongue, and that name is the Love Glove. Right. Bobby comes to in his decrepit bedsit, and there's a voice in his head telling him, "Wake up, Bobby, there's work to be done." And as he wakes to the rainy morning light in Hull, his ears are ringing from the Ride gig the night before. I used to love a bit of Ride. They're a great shoegazing band.
Hmm.
Do you ever get into them?
I like a bit of Britpop.
I wouldn't call it Britpop.
They swayed era?
A bit before then, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'll try and find you some. It's kind of weird, dreamy, slow paced kind of stuff. But lots of guitars with lots of effects.
Okay.
And lots of, moaning, nonsensical lyrics. Anyway, apparently Bobby Carmichael went to see Ride in his hometown of Hull the night before this bizarre dream. So he wakes up, he realizes that both of his arms are missing. And he thinks of himself as some sort of Venus de Milo. And he looks over and sees the red glove on his bed. And it rises in reaction to him moving his shoulder. And the glove speaks to him. Everything is love, only in the real world.
Right.
Yep. So we cut away to the Doom Patrol headquarters. And we see Chief and Joshua studying the bizarre spinning circle of light that 2 weeks earlier was their teammate Rebus. And Josh asks, well, what's it doing? And the chief replies, well, judging by the noises it's making, I'd say it's enjoying itself. But suddenly the chief panics because he wonders what he's done with his chocolate. He's lost his chocolate, guys. But Josh comes to the rescue, offering him a chocolate bar, placating him. And he then asks, well, are the Justice League going to move back in here? And the chief scolds him, saying, I have absolutely no interest in the League's activities. And as long as they stay away from my lab, they can keep doing whatever tedious and public-spirited thing it is that they do. And they both leave the room, and Joshua's placed a taped sign over the door that reads, Access Prohibited. So, yeah, it's of course, no one wants to go in there. But over on Danny the Street, Cliff is kicking back and he's enjoying having a listen of an old album of Louis Armstrong playing trumpet with Bessie Smith. And he remarks, there is a God and he plays trumpet. Isn't that great, Jane? However, the oddly dressed woman that's hanging out with him reveals she is actually Baby Harlot. And Jane is elsewhere, busy working in her underground, modernizing it and integrating stations. And Baby Harlot kind of looks like, how can I describe her? An attractive blonde woman who dresses provocatively, but with cutesy little kitty things on the dress as well. It's a bit odd. But Baby Harlot's looking around. She comes across a beautiful looking urn, which Cliff reveals holds his ashes because he's a sentimental guy and it's a great conversation piece. We then turn our attention to Venice, where we see Dr. Silence again, and he has decided that he's going to destroy the painting he recently acquired using a jar of acid. However, as he sets up to do so, the painting speaks to him and it says, if I were you, Dr. Silence, I wouldn't. And the doctor panics and he drops the jar and it smashes and he's thinking to himself, oh God, it's alive. This is going to end well. We have another cutaway and this time we're at the rubbish dump of Bremen in Germany, where a young boy is exploring and as he does go exploring through the dump, the narration is telling us that things can indeed contain spirits, such as that of a beautiful actress who fell in love with her own image in her mirror. But when her old cracked mirror was replaced, because apparently she would lay on top of her mirror, as you do, and it would get cracked, her new mirror showed her a reflection that she didn't like. So she decided to murder her new mirror using battery acid. But all this did was show her a screeching aged face, which then drove her to madness, and she killed herself.
Right.
And as the poor boy explores, he comes across a pile of broken, haunted mirror glass, which then rises up and kills him by stealing his youth. So there's a much more aged person lying on the ground where the boy once stood. And we learn that the spirit has been given a name by a voice it heard in its dreams. And that name is Alias the Blur.
Right.
We then have an even more bizarre cutaway that shows us six unconnected images. We see a fish tank, a cigarette dispensing machine, an African woman and her child. We see a sneaker, a surfboarder on a wave, and a deck chair with a steaming pot of something placed on it. And we are asked, who is number none? This happened not too long ago in another Morrison issue.
Yeah. I've been building number none up for a while.
Yeah, that guy.
Tongue went a bit numb.
Meanwhile, wandering through the streets of Venice is Agent... I don't know how I'm going to pronounce this. Their name is literally Agent exclamation point.
Yeah.
So I think I might just call her Agent. An Agent... is a gentleman dressed in odd and brightly coloured clothing with an exclamation point motif. So there's exclamation points on his pants and his jacket, and he's even got one attached to his forehead.
And on his shoes.
Yes, and on his shoes. And I think he's got like a birdcage for a chest.
Possibly.
It's something weird. Funny
it is.
That. And it appears that his power is that no one ever notices him at first until after he's passed them by.
Yes, he comes as no surprise.
That's right. Okay. And it's here in Venice that Agent meets Bobby Carmichael, the Love Glove, where they agree that they were both told in their dreams to meet at this place. And it's at this point that Alias the Blur appears, and Bobby asks the agent, do you think that that had a dream too? So they're all being drawn to Venice, and we then go back to Dr. Silence, and he's yelling at the painting, asking why it's tormenting him, when the bizarre trio that all just met arrive, and Agent interrupts with, maybe the painting thinks you're a bore and a loser. You ever thought about that? It's a bit rude. Yeah. Dr. Silence yells at them to get out of his house, and he rushes at them to attack, but he's knocked out by the Love Glove, which Bobby launches towards him. And Bobby wonders what they're meant to do now, and Agent sounds more like a hiccup each time I do it. Yeah. The agent asks if they remember the poem from their shared dream. Now, Paul, do you want me to recite the poem? Because it's a bit...
I wouldn't bother.
You wouldn't bother?
Nonsense words.
Nonsense words in typical Morrison style, that's like a conjuring spell, shall we say. So the three of them are reciting the poem. Dr. Silence comes to suddenly and begs them to stop. And as the colours of the painting start to swirl, a figure begins to pull itself out of the painting. And suddenly Mr. Nobody is standing there. And can I just say, that's a great page. The entire page is Mr. Nobody standing in front of the painting. And the look in his eyes, it's just... I don't know whether he's got murder on his mind or he's just like, hell yeah, bitches, I'm back.
It's pretty intense.
Mm. And understandably, Dr. Silence freaks out, asking, what is it? I can't see it properly. And Mr. Nobody introduces himself and tells his new followers to seize the doctor. And suddenly they take Dr. Silence's mask off him and have him look at his reflection in Alias a Blur. And because Alias steals time, essentially... she steals all of it from the doctor and he is gone. There's nothing but his cape and his hat and his mask left there.
Well, he actually says, if I catch sight of my naked face, I cease to exist.
Oh, there you go.
And he says it's a condition he picked up in a brothel in Berlin when he was young. And the last thing he says is he's got a great big pimple on his nose. At least let me squeeze the bloody... And then he just vanishes.
It's all gone to hell in a handbasket. We return to the patrol headquarters momentarily, and we're shown the spinning circle of light that was Rebus, except that now the circle has separated and broken apart, and we see that a fetus is forming.
Right.
And the final scenes of the issue show Mr. Nobody leading his new team through Dr. Silence's mansion, where he's got all these weird, wonderful antiquities stored away. And Nobody reveals that there's two more that are still yet to join their group eventually, and that his being trapped in the painting for so long has given him time to think up a plan that will cause such a disturbance in the monkey house as has never been seen before. And that plan starts with the perfect key to global outrageousness, the bicycle of Albert Hoffman?
Yeah.
What? Paul, what did you think of issue 49?
I think Grant Morrison is heavily into drug use by this stage.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
You might be onto something there. Yeah.
I think he was actually hitting the shrooms, according to what I've heard.
Right.
Pretty regularly. But this is sort of pulling together the new version of the Brotherhood of Dada. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit iffy on them. I think I prefer the original Brotherhood of Dada. The quiz and all that. I think I like the original versions. But, I mean, you got to give it to Morrison because he doesn't, you know, fall back on old ideas, not even his own from a year and a half ago. He's completely, you know, bringing in new and crazier concepts. So the Love Glove. Alias the Blur, who looks like a sort of a horror image with all the shattered glass for a face with eyes.
But that'd be a cool cosplay to do, actually. All you need was like an old blanket to wrap around yourself and then just smash some mirrors and make a mask out of them.
Yeah, I don't know if you you can make it past the safety checkers on your way to a convention.
Okay, I'll think about it a bit more then.
Yeah, you do that. I think the best thing about this issue is the cover, definitely. Mm-hmm. I really love the cover, and it, you know, someone made a sculpture of Robot Man and put glowing lights in for eyes.
Yeah.
That's very cool. This is an interesting spot of the Doom Patrol, because I quit the book just before this point. So rereading it recently, I was like, oh, I haven't read this one as many times as I've read the other issues.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't hate the issue, but it's not one of my favorite ones. Yeah, you're right. It's the formation of the new Brotherhood. And that's cool, but my God, you've got to get through some stuff, some heavy stuff, to see their formation. And I'm not necessarily dense, but a real head scratcher. as to where Morrison gets his stuff from. I mean, yes, it's inventive and it's very interesting, but man, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's funny how the cover doesn't really have anything to do with what goes on in this part of the story, but it's a great cover. It's fantastic. But yeah, it's anyway, Paul. I'm very interested to hear you take us through issue number 50.
Issue number 50. Yeah, no, this is a celebratory issue, so it has a lot of different artists,
mm-hmm.
And some very interesting art styles. Anyway, so it came out on November 5th, 1991. That was the actual on-sale date, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Cover dated December 1991, $2.50, so a bit of a bumper issue, so mm-hmm. double the price. 48 pages, edited by Tom Payer again, and it's called Tales of Hoffman. So written by Grant Morrison, of course. Now, there's three main artists who I think they do their own pencils and inks. So we've got Richard Case, who opens the book, Jamie Hewlett, mm-hmm. who, if I'm not mistaken, is the guy behind Gorillaz.
Yes, Gorillaz and Tank Girl and lots of fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan Hughes, who's another collaborator of Morrison's over the years. So mm-hmm. he's done a few things with Morrison. We have the letterer Johnny Workman Jr. Now, it's an interesting fact about Johnny Workman Jr. If you bought Batman number 3 last week, Johnny Workman does the letters.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, so still actively lettering comics and colored by Daniel Vozzo. So, anyway, it opens with the story of Albert Hoffman, who has been a chemist and is doing things for a pharmaceutical company and accidentally invents a psychoactive isotope, I think, that he gets on his fingers and he has a reaction to it, and eventually he decides to experiment with it, and he has invented LSD.
Huh.
So this is a true person from history.
It is.
And he decides what will be a safe amount to drink, and he ingests it, and then he starts noting his diary, then he starts to feel weird and decides to go home. This is during the war, so he can't drive your cars, so he has to ride a bike. Mm. And he asks one of his lab assistants to accompany him home, and basically as he rides home, he trips out big time.
Yeah, that's pretty brave, getting on a bicycle in that state of mind.
Yeah, so in his head he's going full ET on the bike, so flying through the air as a great big eye in the sky opens up behind him, and then all these flowers and colours and very trippy stuff is flowing out behind him as he rides.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I don't seem to be moving at all. And so that is the origin of Hoffman's bike, which the Brotherhood of Dada seized last week.
Mm.
Or last issue. Not last week. Depends how often you read them.
Let's say there was a week between the events of each issue.
Yeah, possibly. Anyway, then we get the title page, which is Tales of Hoffman. And it's got an image of the Doom Patrol. Which is very pin-up-y, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
So it shows Cliff and Robot Man, Rebus, Negative Man, and there is Crazy Jane. She's sitting on a chair. And in the background, you can see the sort of the rest of the Doom Patrol. So there's the Chief eating a chocolate bar. There's Dorothy Spinner grinning. And there's Josh Clay, who is just sort of standing with his arm crossed, looking slightly resentful of his diminished body mass.
If we ever get the chance to speak with Morrison, I'd love to know what the idea behind Niles' obsession with chocolate was.
I think it's an interesting question. I mean, it reminds me a bit of Tom Baker, Doctor Who, and Jelly Babies.
And Jelly Beans.
Jelly Babies it was.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Yeah. Jelly something. Yeah, it's just bizarre, and it makes me laugh every time he cracks up about chocolate. Anyway.
It's a quirk.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, the Brotherhood of Data are gathered around, so we see Agent and the Love Glove and Alias the Blur and, Agent looks at, touches the bike and sort of gets hit with some psychoactive discharge.
Yeah. I love that band.
And he starts tripping out. And meanwhile, Mr. Nobody jumps on the bike and starts riding through the house and then down the stairs and out into the streets. Uh-oh. And he's basically spouting all sorts of nonsense. Yeah. And then we cut to the next section, which is called Chapter 1, A Wonderful Space Mirror. And this is art by Jamie Hewlett, which is an interesting change. So it gets more cartoony and unrealistic, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do have to say, this is probably my favourite part of the book, though, seeing Hewlett's take on the patrol.
Yeah, they do look very, very goofy.
Yes.
So, and Cliff, Robot Man, looks like a gorilla almost.
Yeah.
He's hulking with his massive forehead and everything. Anyway, Danny, this street has moved them to Venice because they've heard stuff about ominous things from the American embassy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a parrot that's been saying da-da-da-da for 2 days now, so they connect it to the Brotherhood of Dada pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, I thought they were trapped in the painting that ain't Paris. Anyway, so they get out there, and Rebus has rejoined them, and he has donned the bandages and got some glasses on, and they said, last time we saw you, a big glowing ring of light. He said, yes, I was having sex with myself. I'll tell you all about it later.
Right.
And he said, and then Jane says, best kind of sex I've heard. And he said, indeed, the Earth moved. Then again, it usually does, with a rotational speed of around 1,000 kilometers per hour, as far as I remember. Yes. Right. So Danny takes them to Venice, and then we see the Brotherhood of Dada roaming the streets, and they're looking for Mr. Nobody. And then we see a tourist who has the word tourist taped to the side of his head, who looks suspiciously like Grant Morrison to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we see Mr. Nobody riding through the streets on the bike, and, you know, there are birds in front of him fleeing from the bike, and behind him is like this swarm of hearts and, you know, trippy, cartoony looking things and feet and hammers and all these things coming out the back. And everyone is tripping out as they so we see all these people, and Mr. Nobody is basically spouting nonsense like, monotony can damage your health, art for breakfast, art for lunch, art for tea, yahoo. Stuff is swirling in the sky around them.
It's getting very trippy.
And Bobby Carmichael, who we know is the Love Glove, is looking up in the sky, but he's seeing things. He's saying, I may be hallucinating, but where did this amazing street come from? And then we saw the Doom Patrol sort of slouching down the street. And, the Doom Patrol are facing the Brotherhood of Dada. And Bobby Carmichael said, who are they? Superheroes. I've never even seen a superhero before. And Agent says, I called Superman an arsehole once, but I don't think he heard me. And Rebus sums up this encounter by saying, I think they're on drugs. And they're staring at each other. Then the Love Glove looks to one side and sort of opens a door in reality and sees the glove tree again. Mm-hmm. And he notices that he has a right-handed glove, but all the gloves on the tree are left-handed. And then he steps out into there and comes back, and he's got a new glove. And, Rebus comes to confront him, and he basically, this new glove slaps Rebus back. And Rebus goes smash into a wall, which sort of looks like it's turned into fabric.
Mm.
And Bobby Carmichael goes, all right, the shove glove.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, Jane is getting ready to attack, and for some reason a gun appears on her head and fires to the side. Anyway, and she goes to deal with this, and then she slips on a banana peel. And they're all excited because the Brotherhood of Data realize that Number None is on the scene. And Number None is the sneaky thing that you can't see, who moves things around and hides your pen and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, so that's another member of the Brotherhood of Data. Mr. Nobody has he's been changed by riding the bike. He's got weirder eyes and things now, and he's looking more abstract. Yeah, and he's looking at a map and trying to work out what to do, and then he sees Cliff and recognizes him, and then he starts riding around Cliff, and Cliff is being affected by all this psychoactive weirdness, and then he adjusts his brain chemistry.
That was a really cool moment, though, where Cliff punches some buttons on his arm.
Yeah.
He releases more serotonin into his brain.
Yeah, and then and that, you know, stops him being affected. But he's saying to Mr. Nobody that you're hurting people because there's a woman who's having a bad trip lying on the ground freaking there. But Mr. Nobody said it's something's obviously just triggered the paranoia that's inside society instilled in her in the first place. And he calms her down, and this cathedral starts attacking Cliff and smacks him and then throws him into one of the canals.
Yeah,
and this woman is freaking out, and Mr. Nobody crouches down to her and says, it's okay, you've just been conditioned by to look for monsters everywhere, it's okay. And he turns a bad trip into a good trip, which is sort of a little bit of subtext about what Grant Morrison thinks of drugs. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and the art has changed here, and I think this here is Ryan Hughes now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the Doom Patrol are trying to stop them, but they're basically getting outwitted. So there's a yellow bus is driving past, and it goes on to Danny the Street, and the Brotherhood of Data run onto the bus, and they grab this guy off the street, and they're holding him hostage, and he said it. And Mr. Novi says, I'm warning you, I have a hard-boiled egg, and I know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they grab the bus, and Danny the Street goes with them because this guy's going to get hurt by the hard-boiled egg, and the Doom Patrol are left stranded in Venice.
Crap.
Yeah. And Cliff says, God damn it, they did it again. They beat us again. Yeah.
Yep, I'm just as frustrated as you are, Cliff. Yeah.
Yeah, and Cliff says, you know, the worst thing about all this, what you know what really worries me? What if he's right? You know, because the Doom Patrol don't want to be in a position where they're the ones, you know, making everything normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, we have an epilogue here, which is, I think, drawn by Mark Dringenberg, who was famous for Sandman at the time.
Yeah, it does look like his style, yeah.
Yeah, so Danny the Street has arrived in a desert. And, yeah, Mr. Nobody is monologuing pretty fiercely about plans. And meanwhile, the rest of the Brotherhood of Data are re-engineering the bus and inserting the bicycle inside the bus engine.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And they're going to use the yellow bus to go on the road. And Mr. Nobody has the painting that ate Paris under a American flag that he pulls off. And he said, I'm going to change the world. What can I do? I'm going to run for president and win the race by fair means or foul. He's going, oh, yes, we're going to invite the world to a party they'll never forget. And then he puts the American flag on as a cape and said, Utopia, here we come. And that is the end of the story part of the comic.
Oh, dear.
Crazy elections are everywhere at the moment, aren't they?
Oh, how timely. Yes. Yes. Wow. God.
Yeah. But this isn't where the issue ends because it has a series of pin-ups which have sort of made up stories associated with them. So, and this is Tales of the Doom Patrol that are untold. So the first piece is by Duncan Fregredo, and it shows the Doom Patrol just in a sort of standard pose with Cliff dropping a teacup and Rebus hovering with the teacup and everyone having tea. Very strange. And then we see a couple of pages by Shaky Kane, who is an artist I'm unfamiliar with, but basically he's telling of an untold story, and it's Dr. Chef, who's merged the Doom Patrol into one person. So we sort of see a combo of Robot Man, Negative Man, and Elastic Girl all combined into one person.
Mm.
And there's the other one, the Panic of the Pinhead, which is the guy who has a very small head, and he's meant to turn the Doom Patrol into small-headed people equally.
Yep.
And the Unbearably Tall Man, who has turned the Doom Patrol into matches and is about to strike Rita as a match.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is a beautiful classic Rita Farr image drawn by Brian Bolland.
Mm. It's very cool.
Yeah, with her stretching out a hand very tenderly to hold this little monster. It looks very freaky.
Yeah.
And then there's another Jamie Hewlett piece, which is about Crazy Jane has turned into Lizzie Borden, the psycho killer. Yeah, and she's like a cartoon character with an axe.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Right.
And then we have another one, which I like this one. In Three Cheers for the Chief, we entered a world of glass pyramids, children with intelligent psoriasis, colonies on their forearms, and walking bridge. And the chief joined the action in his big wheelchair. And it's got Steve Yarl has done this piece, and it shows the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol, but the chief is in this massive monster truck version of his wheelchair.
It's the most action-y action chair I think we've ever seen.
Yeah, and then there's an image by Paul Grist, who's another collaborator of Morrison from the Brit days, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows Robotman walking around away from the team, looking like he's quit.
Oh no!
Now the next one is really weird. It's like it's not even an image of the Doom Patrol. It's a totem pole that sort of represents the Doom Patrol, made out of all sorts of bits of things. Yeah, it's very strange. That's by Ryan Hughes. And in the back is Kaplunk that looks a little bit like it's got a brain in it instead of balls.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
Funny that.
Yeah, and the next one is a picture of a Negative Man, Rebus, surrounded by commoners, I would say.
Yeah.
This is a Simon Bisley piece, and he's got Rebus has all these mice on his head for some reason.
Yeah, I don't, yeah, sure.
Very odd.
Mm-hmm.
And the final one, which I think is my favourite, who do we think? Is this Richard Case or Mike?
I believe it is, yes.
Yeah, Richard Case. It's all this Doom Patrol merchandise that doesn't exist, like the Crazy Jane cookbook and the brain in a jar.
Yeah.
Robot Man bottle opener radio.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And the Crazy Jane action figure with the interchangeable heads.
And the bar of Big Chief Chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's Dada Viewmaster with Dada reels.
Mm.
And Rebus underwear in blue and pink colours.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we survived number 50. What do you think of that, Mike?
Oh, it's... Again, I have mixed feelings about this because, I love the character of Mr. Nobody, but and as excited as I am to see his return and learn of what his new plan is, it's then having to deal with all the chaos and absurdity that he brings back into the storyline as well. It's sort of, you know, good and bad, I think, because... It's a dense read, this one. As you said, a lot of it is just nonsense words thrown together.
Yeah.
Especially when he's monologuing and finally getting to the revelation as to what his plan is to run for the presidency. So I enjoyed it, but I know there are huge fans of Morrison's run and they think it's groundbreaking and it's, yeah, it is, but it's still, you know, in some ways not an easy read. But there are still funny bits in it and it's still enjoyable and entertaining and very interesting. And as I said, my favorite segment of this is the Jamie Hewlett art. Oh, Jamie Hewlett, sorry, Jamie Hewlett art. In this, God, I can't even think straight now after reading that again. But yeah, it's It's getting us, we're on the road with a new story with Mr. Nobody, and that's very cool. So, yeah, let's get on to that. Go on, because the rest of it's doing my head in. So I did like the real world touches of Albert Hoffman, though, and his bite.
Yeah. So it's a strange thing for Morrison to have researched, but there you go.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice, this has a very different cover to most of the Doom Patrol covers. It has like a strip of white and another big slab of white, and the art by Simon Bisley is just in a narrow piece, and it looks like the whole Doom Patrol has sort of fallen down a crevasse and piled up on each other or something.
Yeah.
Very odd. It's a very understated image for an issue 50 celebration, really.
Oh, very much so, yeah. The backup story with the alternating artists, that was weird and cool too. So to see other artists' interpretation of the team, so yeah.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed because I don't think any of the adventures shown there really harken back to the tone of the original Doom Patrol particularly.
No.
They're all very Morrison weird.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yes, which, yeah, this is prime Morrison real estate here, kids. It's like, holy geez. So,
I would have preferred a little bit more of a tribute to, Drake and Premiani's style in some of them.
Yeah.
They don't all have to be, you know, Morrison weird versions.
I wonder when this issue first came out, how much knowledge of the previous incarnations there really were, you know, or whether Morrison was just determined to ignore it in a way and just soldier on boldly and bravely with his drug-addled contribution.
It's almost like he's bursting with ideas to the point where he just can't contain himself and, you know, everything is, you know, so crazy and there's so much of it and all of it's coming out regardless of quality or value.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Wow. I would be interested to hear from other Patrol fans that absolutely love Morrison's run and what their take is on this particular issue and start of this story, Magic Bus storyline as well, because I like it, but I don't love it. It's,
Now, the Magic Bus, like, this is another allusion to, similar to the bike of Hoffman, which is a real thing. There was a yellow bus which was run by a guy called Ken Kesey, and he basically led a group called the Merry Pranksters, and they drove across America encouraging people to try acid tests, which is, you know, have LSD for the first time. And they were operational in the 60s. So this is another sort of link to that. And that kicks on in full in the next trade that we're going to look at, which is called Magic Bus.
Yes. Oh, acid. What a funny old... Oh, dear.
Wow. So in some ways, it's really weird that in the early 90s, there's a guy who's really mining the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. Not so much of the Doom Patrol 60s.
Yeah, not really.
But the whole counterculture stuff. So, yeah.
Anyway, shall we, are we done doomsplaining? Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we're done. My brain hurts.
It does. This is one of these issues. I'm very relieved to have them done.
Oh, dear. Okay, let's move on.
Okay.
The Film and Water Podcast, a weekly show about movies old and new, hosted by obsessive movie nerd Rob Kelly and a rotating series of special guests. From sci-fi to horror, dramas to family films, comedies to adventure epics, we watch it all. The Film and Water Podcast is part of the Fire and Water family of podcasts, available weekly at fireandwaterpodcast.blogspot.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last time on the show, we asked everyone, what makes you try a new comic? So we heard from Martin Gray straight out of the gate, fast. And we're sorry, Martin, we did miss your email. And
Wilfred missed it. You know.
Wilfred, yeah, bloody Wilfred, yeah. 2 weeks ago. Anyway, he said, I'll try a new book if I'm interested in one of the characters or a character or someone smart has recommended. And I suspect everyone else will have this answer too.
Yeah, and funnily enough, Ange said, same answer as Mart. I'll always buy/try some characters. A handful of creators I follow around.
We heard from KMW, who's at Astrakis 1. He's given up on the anagrams. And he said he looks for a creative writer with a strong original concept, even for a character I usually don't like.
At Fractures on the Twitters, who this week is Ferocious Fractures, said, when I was young, all of my comic buying was character-based. Now I will only try a new comic on the strength of the creative team.
Right. And on the Facebook, we got a couple of answers. So Doug Javisha said, sometimes creator, mostly first image solicitation image. So a John Tyler Christopher action figure cover is the quickest way for a comic to get my attention. Is that the sort of Star Wars action figure covers?
Yeah. And the Marvel Secret Wars stuff, he did quite a few of them as well. I don't know. They were sort of the hotness that all the collectors were trying to track down as well, because they look so realistic and they're so well done. Yeah.
Okay.
Still on the Facebooks, we also heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said, it used to be characters, but now I focus solely on creators. I will buy anything Chris Sprouse draws.
I do like Chris Sprouse art.
Yeah. Cool.
What about you, Mike?
For me, I'm going to have to say it's usually the concept. Or like, as Doug said, that first solicitation blurb. If it's a really interesting hook or idea that is something that hasn't been done before, I'm more willing to try it these days. I don't so much follow a lot of creators from book to book, but it varies. But yeah, it's more like if it's a really interesting idea or something that I haven't read before, I'm more likely to give that a try, because I like to try new and different books these days. And you never know what you'll find when you look a little bit outside your regular field of creators, I guess.
Well, give me an example, Mike.
Okay, let's say Buzzkill by Donny Cates a couple of years back, about a superhero who gained his powers through alcohol and nicotine.
Right.
And that actually, you would think it was going to go one way, but it went a completely different way and remains one of my favorite comic series of all time. Another one was Helpless Great Warrior, about a small green warrior woman demon thing in a fantasy land that was kind of very Adventure Time. Sure, it was completely bizarre and weird, and I loved it. What's another? World's End, about basically War of the Worlds meets Wind in the Willows. It was fantastic stuff. So, yeah, if it's got an interesting hook, that's more likely to grab me these days and give something a try. And it's led me to get more miniseries, whereas ongoings I've kind of dropped back from a bit, because you kind of know what you're getting month to month with a lot of them. So, what about you, Paul? What gets your attention? What makes you try a new comic?
I used to be when I first started reading comics, I was a character follower. Mm-hmm. But that didn't last very long, and pretty soon, probably after about 3 or 4 years, I started to become a creator follower. And okay. I would mostly focus on writers. So, mm-hmm. But the nature of reading comics for so long, it sort of evolved a bit more now. So time was I would buy anything by my favorite writers, and to be honest, I've been a little let down by doing that in the last, 5 or 6 years. So I used to buy everything by Grant Morrison. I don't do that anymore.
Oh.
I pick and choose depending on the project. Yep. A little bit. I used to buy everything by James Robinson, and I sort of lost a bit of interest in his stuff around the time of New 52, I think.
Right.
Yeah. So now mostly I buy comics based on what people are liking and what gets reviewed well and what I think, you know, there's a few people who review comics and their interests sort of mesh with mine very nicely. So, you know, when they say something is really good, I pay quite a close attention. Like the iFanboy guys, you know, I get a lot of recommendations from them. So, yeah, because, you know, they're smart. They've been doing it for a long time. Martin Gray, he's a good comic reviewer. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the sort of stuff that floats my boat. So, for instance, I just ordered the Vision trade the other day because I've heard so many good things about the Vision that I thought I'd check it out. Plus, I mean, it fits into my sort of personal preferences. It's going to be two trades and that's it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, Tom King's story is done after 12 issues. So I don't need to, you know, read it forever.
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man or Superman.
Yeah. Until Marvel reboots them again, or you know, because they never do that.
Yeah, but I mean, I love having complete things on my shelf to read over and over. And you know, if, like the Hawkeye, I've got two hardcovers of Hawkeye. That's the whole thing that Matt Fraction did.
Yep.
And you know, I'll do that for things like, you know, Greg Rucka when he writes Black Widow and things like that. I can just get that. So, you know, I hate buying things I don't like, so I tend to be very choosy about what I buy.
Right. And I guess, you know, good buzz is, you know, very helpful in that way. So, you know,
it is.
If the more that people are enjoying something, the more likely you are to try something out. So, yeah.
And being a trade waiter, you do get time to see, you know, oh, everyone likes this, and then by issue four, oh, everyone is sick of it. You know? You get to see a little bit of a long view of what's going on. And,
yeah. It was interesting when you were saying the reasons you stopped following creators, because that's kind of why I go more for concepts these days, because it's as often as a writer or an artist will try something new or, you know, veer into different territory for each story, you kind of know what you're getting. In a way, you kind of know what's in their wheelhouse and what they are and are not good at. So
well, you see their bag of tricks after a while.
Yeah, that's it. Whereas I'm kind of like, okay, well, I've seen, for example, all, you know, as much as Morrison as I can possibly handle. So I'm going to try something a little bit different. Hey, that concept there sounds interesting, you know. Like I never would have picked up Descender if it hadn't been for the hook of the concept about, you know, the young robot boy, you know, who is being linked to these gigantic robots that basically wiped out civilizations, and robots are essentially banned in the future. And so all these people are hunting for him. I was like, what? So it's interesting reasons. Yeah, very cool.
Okay, cool. Now we did get an iTunes review from the Canadian folk. And this one came in from Juice.
Oh,
Aaron, our friend from Comicosity, and he said 5 stars, 2 hilarious guys talk Doom Patrol. He's talking about us.
Oh.
And he said Mike and Paul are the world's best Doom Patrol podcasters.
Right.
This show is a ton of fun, and it's impressed me since the start how the guys keep this show friendly to new listeners. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, Aaron.
Oh,
very nice of you.
Very good. Checks in the mail. Well, I think we've done the show.
We have. We've done a show. We survived.
So, anyway, don't forget, you can talk to Wilfred at WFD Pod. Thank you to everyone who sends Wilfred information about Doom Patrol so he can tell us. It saves us a lot of time. It's weird becoming Doom Patrol news magnets that way. You can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. Doug will put up a post about this on his blog, which is at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Do you want to know a secret?
What's the secret?
If you search for Doom Patrol blog, you get Doug's results, number
nice.
One.
Nice.
Yeah. He's been doing it for a long time, a lot longer than we've been doing this. Waiting for Doom Facebook page. That's where people with Facebook do Facebook communications on Doom to us. Yes. Anyway, Mike, what are we doing next week?
Next week, we are going back to the 60s for some more Volume 1 hotness. We are looking at issues 113 and 114.
Oh, they're super hot, those two.
Super hot. And we're getting ever closer towards the end of that run, too.
We are. Oh, closing. And we have a question of the week for those who like to answer questions of the week on our show. And that is, what's your favorite? Who is your favorite fictional family? Sometimes I make up a question and I don't know how to answer it.
Well done, sir. Well done.
I've got a week to think.
Yes, you have.
Please, may I have some thinking music, Mike?
I'll see what I can do.
All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for joining us, guys. See ya.
First you look so strong, then you fade away.